Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Michelle Morin on Deep Friendship.
And because that had worked so well, we started just, you know, coming up with other schedules. We would go a week at a time to the Book of Romans, you know, devote a whole week to one chapter, read it in different versions of the Bible, try to memorize different chapters. And because that really was the backbone of our relationship, it was a different kind of friendship. We never lacked for things to talk about, and it was never awkward to say, how is this impacting your life? We really opened the door to that kind of vulnerable sharing very early on in the relationship, and it became natural to just pray for one another and to challenge one another.
Michelle Morin, next. As we all know, in-person friendship involves a risky level of vulnerability and humility. But it can also bring with it rich blessing, and that especially so when it's strengthened by a faith-shaping commitment to truth. Spencer Dahlke contacted Bible teacher and writer Michelle Morin to discuss her piece, Take the First Steps Toward Deep Friendship.
What prompted you to write this article?
It sort of happened by surprise. You know how time can just get away from you. And I have been reading the Bible with a friend for a long time, and we were talking about what our next project would be. And it sort of hit me that we've been doing this for a long time. And I had to, the math was easy because she used to hold one of my sons in her lap in church, and he's 26 years old. And I thought, wow, we've been doing this for a minute. And it just hit me that this is a gift that I have been receiving for years and years and just kind of taking for granted. And I thought, well, I need to think this through, because I had an assignment for Desiring God that I had to write an article. And I thought this would be something that I could share with other women, that this is an important thing that we need. We need friends and we need spiritual encouragement. And so I began processing how wonderful the gift has been over the years to be able to read the Bible with someone, to be able to share life with them on a practical level. And she and her husband were here for Thanksgiving dinner every year. And you know, we have such good memories together. So it's kind of a gift that keeps on giving.
It strikes me that, you know, we don't take friendship very seriously, at least in our culture nowadays. But what do you understand by the term friendship, and what place does God, I guess, have for our humanity by giving us friends?
It's by design. We were never designed to live in isolation. We were designed to live in community. Even when differences arise, we become better by leaning in rather than by dropping everything and taking our toys and going home. It's better to learn from one another. It will really become sandpaper for one another as we learn to live with one another's differences. We don't have to be carbon copies of one another in order to be friends. I certainly have had friends over the years that were the same age as I was, and we were raising our kids together. That can become a very temporary thing. When you have friends of different ages, if you have friends who are older than you, you benefit from their experience. My friend that I wrote about in the article for Desiring God, she passed away this year. She was in her 90s. She remembers rationing after World War II. When you have someone who's lived through so much of history, they can bring a perspective to your concerns that is so unique. And I think that's one of the biggest gifts of friendship, is just that multi-perspectivalism, that you get another set of eyes on your circumstances, and it gives you just a broader view than what you can come up with on your own.
Were there perspectives that your friend brought to your life?
Yes. I was such an angsty parent back in my 30s. I had four sons, 8 years apart. So I had, you know, she was my friend when we were dealing with the teenage stuff and the getting a license. And she remembers, she was a big encouragement to me when I was dealing with the toddler stuff and the baby stuff. And she always had such a good handle on the real picture. Like I was convinced that I was ruining my children and that the world was coming to an end. And she would remind me, you know, you're doing your best and you're showing up every day to homeschool. And she always had that reassuring perspective on just life in general, that the world was not going to end anytime soon. And I needed to just relax a little bit and trust the Lord.
It's a good perspective to bring.
Yeah.
Well, would you evaluate, how do you think that we as a culture generally in America are doing with building friendships?
I think we've got some work to do, because in one way of thinking of it, we can trick ourselves into feeling connected with online connections, and they're certainly helpful sometimes. There's nothing wrong with having friends online, but we can fool ourselves into thinking that we are connected when we click on like, or when we comment on somebody's vacation video or whatever. We need the real life on life connection, I think. It's hard because we don't leave time for it. I think that's one of the biggest obstacles to friendship, is that we don't leave room in our schedule for it. We have isolated ourselves to the point where we are almost allergic to vulnerability, because we can protect ourselves in so many ways from people knowing us truly. Our homes become fortresses rather than places where we practice hospitality and invite people in. It takes a lot of humility to be your true self with someone, to ask for prayer about sin tendencies, things that are bogging us down in our walk with the Lord. I feel very strongly that we really need to leave time to connect with people. And I'm really guilty of this, because I get my list made for the day, and I have a lot more control of my time than I used to have. It used to be really pretty well taken up with child rearing and, you know, all the comings and goings of parenting. But even so, now that I have all this control over my time, I will schedule myself so that I don't want to go to Bible study, because if I do, I won't get to work on this writing project, or I've scheduled that I'm going to catch up on laundry that day. Or it's amazing how the mundane details of life can just take over and we don't make time in our lives to connect with people.
That's really interesting. I'm wondering if you can say more about like the connection between overscheduledness, or maybe even just the root of having schedules that are jam-packed. What do you think is the cause there? Are we seeing something is more important than friendships, or do we just not value friendships very much?
Well, we don't value friendship enough, and we place our value so much on what we're accomplishing. You know, we have our little rubric by which we decide, okay, this was a good day. I checked everything off on my list. I wonder sometimes if we think that God loves us more on days when we successfully complete our do list, and then he loves us less on days when we feed our kids cereal and are kind of a mess and never get out of our pajamas until 10 o'clock in the morning. But God has a different way of measuring success. And I think if we have his eyes on the importance of relationship and just what we can do for one another just by being present to one another's situation, being the sounding board for somebody else's questions or their doubts.
Yeah, I've had a number of discussions even recently about AI, and we've been talking about this technology as a thing that's super efficient, and yet God is not often super efficient. He doesn't just download truth into our brains, but he works with us, and in fact, even like lived among us. So, well, I mean, it's uniquely American to be like very efficient, very productive, but it's not really great for our humanity, is it?
No. And I think we have this idyllic vision of how a friendship would work, that we'd have to meet at a coffee shop and you know, we'd sit there and it would be very beautiful and peaceful. But a lot of times we would meet at a playground and sit at a picnic table, and I would have four screaming kids monitoring them from a distance, and we would bring our journals and our Bibles with us, and we would sit there and we would try to have a conversation, and I would have food for the kids, and they'd come running up, and I'd hand them a granola bar and a water bottle, and off they'd go again, and you know, they'd kind of watch one another, and I'd be paying attention to their activities, but you know, I could see everything, but I could also be present to my friend, and we really had to be creative to come up with time together. And then she moved out of state, so we had to be even more creative about how we would connect. We would have phone calls, and I would email things to her, and it was, if you're going to have a close friendship with someone, you have to really make it a priority and do the work.
I was looking into how we think about friends as a culture in America. And it was really interesting. I saw this like article in some California newspaper about Europeans and Asians will come to the United States and be really feel very accepted because we're friendly. But the article says we're like peaches. On the outside, we're soft, we're friendly. Our hearts are like, you know, the like stones. They're like pits that it's really hard to break into. I guess maybe do we just need to be more community focused?
There's a Tim Keller quote that I love. He said that community works the gospel out into the corners of our lives. The truth of the gospel is beautiful, but it's theoretical if we're sitting in a room by ourselves. If I never had to rub shoulders with another human being, I would think all kinds of lovely things about myself that are not true. I would think that I am patient and that I am long-suffering and that I never get frustrated or whatever, because there would be no one frustrating me. You know, there's a reason why the fruit of the Spirit are what they are, because if we, you know, we would not need patience if it weren't for other people. We would not need to be reminded to be loving if we were by ourselves all the time, because we would imagine that we are already that way and it would never would be challenged. But sanctification is a slow walk and it requires lots of forgiveness. People do outrageous things. People say things that hurt our feelings. We do outrageous things and we say things that hurt other people's feelings. We need to receive grace from other people. We need to extend grace to other people and that can be a challenge. It's a lot easier to just stay alone and not have to be sanctified.
Something I've been thinking about off and on occasionally as it becomes relevant is it seems we just live in a culture of justifiers. We can't really tolerate thinking of ourselves as sinners, which, I mean, it's just a human condition. But, you know, even the way we talk, like when we offend someone, we don't really say, forgive me. We say, I'm sorry. And then what we say back is, it's okay, you know? So the idea, like you even mentioned earlier about friendship, cultivating humility, I guess, how can we do that?
The very humble stance to be friends with somebody who differs from us on some small thing, but, you know, we admit that we could be wrong on something or that we don't have a corner on truth. And to allow someone to know us can be very humbling, because if we stay surface level, we might be admired. To give up the privilege of being admired and just to be loved warts and all can be really scary, because there's always the chance that the other person will just reject us if they find out that we aren't as perfect as we appeared to be in that first coffee date that we had, you know.
My guest today is Michelle Morin. She's a Bible teacher and a writer and the author of Take the First Steps Toward Deep Friendship with Desiring God. You write a little bit about the rewards of building deep spiritual friendships. Do you see a difference between friendship and spiritual friendship?
Well, I made that distinction because only Christians can have spiritual friendship. And I've had friends before that, you know, we were parents together, we were church women together, we did vacation Bible school together, but we never really prayed together or connected over the Word of God. Spiritual friendship, I guess the reason I was specific about that was because my friend that I was writing about and the friendship started around scripture. We had been part of the women's ministry at my church, and we were challenged to read through the New Testament together in a year. And we managed to do that. And at the end of the year, we said, let's go for the whole Bible. So we did that together the next year. And because we enjoyed connecting over it, we would call one another and we would share what we'd gleaned from our reading. And because that had worked so well, we started just, you know, coming up with other schedules. We would go a week at a time to the book of Romans, you know, devote a whole week to one chapter, read it in different versions of the Bible, try to memorize different chapters. And because that really was the backbone of our relationship, it was a different kind of friendship. We never lacked for things to talk about, and it was never awkward to say, how is this impacting your life? We really opened the door to that kind of vulnerable sharing very early on in the relationship, and it became natural to just pray for one another and to challenge one another.
Given that we live in a culture that, you know, we've been talking about is isolated, individualistic, we like our privacy and this sort of a thing, I imagine it can feel very intrusive when we say, hey, let's hang out. How would you recommend we foster a heart that wants friendships, perseveres to build friendships, and works past like this feeling of intrusiveness? I guess what I'm trying to ask is, how do we build these friendships?
Well, I think the local church is a good place to start. You know, if we commit ourselves to showing up every week and become involved in ministry, some of the best experiences I've had in relationship with other people is just serving together. You know, you have a common goal and you see one another just naturally. You know, it's very organic if you're meeting together to plan. Right now I'm working on getting ready for a women's event next month, and we've had several meetings, and I've gotten to know these other women on the team because we've talked about the event, but we also, because people are just that way, while we're having coffee, we talk about what's going on in our lives, or we share things that are important to us, and you really get to know people when you work together. So I would recommend the local church is a good place to start, and that can be hard for people because, again, you're bumping into people that are different from you, and people say outrageous things, and you have to just take a long view. I can't believe that I've gone to the same church for almost 30 years, but it happens one Sunday at a time, and one children's ministry event at a time, and one potluck dinner at a time. And, you know, you take a casserole to somebody when they have their baby, and the next thing you know, you're going to the graduation party for that baby. It just happens by showing up, and you really do have to take a long view, I think.
I'm reminded of C.S. Lewis writes about the four loves. It's kind of really unfortunate that we have only one word for love in the English language when there's four different kinds. C.S. Lewis talks about it. He says, a friend is a person that you find and you say, oh, you too? I thought I was the only one. So I'm curious what your thoughts are about that and how service builds that relationship. What is it about being with a person and doing things together that forges that bond, do you think?
Well, another thing that C.S. Lewis said when he was describing friendship love is that romantic love is face-to-face. It happens as people, you know, you're talking about the relationship, you're talking about each other, but friendship love, you're both facing forward in the same direction and you're looking at the task at hand. You have things in common. You have a shared purpose. You learn things about that person just by the way they do what they do. So it's very practical, and nobody's ever going to make a Hallmark movie probably about a friendship, but there's a beauty to that everyday kind of getting to know another person, supporting them in practical ways. That is so needed in today's world because people are feeling so lonely. And there's a safety to just knowing that someone, even if you haven't talked to one another for a week, I have some friends that I call low maintenance friends because we don't have to explain why we haven't called each other or why we haven't texted for a month. We just pick up where we left off. How are you doing? You know, and it's not a guilt thing that we have to explain ourselves if we haven't had time to connect for a while.
You write about the rewards of a spiritual friendship, and I imagine we probably talked a little bit about some of these things, but would you tie like some of that together about why is it worth seeking friendships? What sort of benefit do you experience as human beings, and especially as Christians, to building friendships?
It makes our world bigger. We are so prone to surrounding ourselves with things that are safe, people that are safe. If we have another set of eyes on our circumstances, we might hear things that we don't want to hear. We might actually have someone say to us that we need to grab a hold of our bootstraps and pull, or that the world isn't as dark as we think it is, or this is not a huge problem because they can look at it from a different perspective. It also gives us someone to cry with and to pray with and to laugh with. A shared joy is so much better than a joy experienced alone. And shared sorrow is cut in half. You know, we have somebody else to help us and pray with us and to be able to talk something out. So I think that the value of another set of eyes on our own circumstances is incalculable. We were never designed to slog through life on our own. If the New Testament church could look ahead in time and see the way we have privatized our faith, I think they'd be astonished.
I mean, an obvious question that I probably could ask is obviously David and Jonathan. We often think of them as kind of the paradigm for yeah. friends. I mean, do you think that's true? Do they kind of exhibit some of these things that you described? And what do you think we can learn about developing good friendships from their example?
I think they had a long-haul friendship, and there certainly were obstacles to it, because on the one hand, you've got Jonathan's father, Saul, that's trying to kill David, and that's certainly a non-starter for friendship. But then you've got them making commitments to one another that extend past the end of their lives, and David following through on caring for Jonathan's family even after Jonathan had died, and bringing Mephibosheth into his home and caring for him, allowing him to eat at the king's table, and just being aware of him through the years. I do think that that's one sweet benefit of friendship that maybe we overlook, is that you become connected to their world. My dear friend passed away back in January, and as a result, we've been involved in caring for her husband and staying in touch with them. And as a result, we've met her niece and nephew-in-law. We've gained two new friends as a result of a friendship that is going to have to wait for heaven to be continued. But the benefits of a friendship are eternal if you have the Lord involved.
We forget about that, don't we?
Yeah, we do. We forget that we're eternal creatures.
How can the church institutionally help encourage the growth of organic friendships in the congregation?
Oh, that's such a good question. And that's something that's, I think a lot of people have tried to do it. And it sometimes programmed things really work great. And sometimes they don't. You know, sometimes they just fall flat and you feel like it's a forced situation where they're trying to tell you how to feel. And that's never very helpful. But I do think just ministry, making opportunities, we need to accept that it's not just a nice thing to have on the side, that it's really something that's necessary to get women together in the same space, to provide truth, to really grow around. And just being able to serve the different generations. If you have an opportunity to work in the nursery, you get to know somebody's kids, and you get to minister to the mom when she comes and goes. And we have to be aware of one another's needs, the whole meal train thing, of being able to show up at somebody's house with a pizza or a casserole or something, and then offer to watch their kids when they go to the doctor. Or, there are very practical things that we can do to embed ourselves in one another's lives. But I think we have to take the risk of, even on Sunday morning, that's such a fraught time. It can be so busy for church people, that to just pay attention to the fact that there's somebody sitting there that you've never seen before, and get our courage pulled together and introduce ourselves and try to remember from week to week. I've started writing names in my calendar on the Sunday, that if I meet a new person and I write their name down, then chances are I'll do a better job of saying hi to them the next time, because I won't be embarrassed because I forgot their name. And so I think we just have to pay attention. You know, we get inside our heads and we feel all self-conscious. Maybe they don't want to be talked to. Maybe I'll be bugging them if I say hello, or maybe they would rather not have me mention the fact that we have a Sunday school class that's available for the age of their child, that their child appears to be, and invite them to come to a event that's planned, near on the church calendar. But I feel like we play it safe.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, Bible teacher and writer Michelle Morin. We've been discussing her article, Take the First Steps Toward Deep Friendship. You can read it at desiringgod.org. On tomorrow's program, it's Chris McKenna on raising kids in a digitally saturated culture.
Not every conversation about pornography needs to be in depth and has to be a PowerPoint and research and super serious. I want parents to understand that it's actually in the little drips and the little just invitations. It doesn't even have to include the word pornography, that you equip your kids to come to you when they struggle with pornography.
Chris McKenna, coming up tomorrow on His People.